This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, brought to you by Full Sneak Gear. Check out their entire lineup at fullsneakgear.com. Also, be sure to check out our entire stable of podcasts at sportsmansempire.com. This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
Spring break isn't what it used to be. It's better. This spring, stay 3 nights and get a $50 Best Western gift card. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Visit bestwestern.com for complete terms and conditions.
All right, guys, welcome to today's show. And this is another awesome episode with Pedro Delgado, a guy from Florida who loves to hunt anything and everything he can, loves to travel to hunt. And so we're going to talk about a ton of different hunting stories, including some of the recurring hunts that he goes on every year. Because once you actually travel and go and find a spot that you like to hunt, an animal that you like to hunt that you can't do in your home state, it just seems like an even stronger addiction than finding something new to hunt close by home. There's something about traveling and hunting that just hooks you. But before we jump into all these stories, I got to tell you, I have lucked out so much this year on shed hunting. It's been incredible, and I cannot seem to find one during the day, which sounds crazy, but we've been thermal coyote hunting, and the first night we were doing a 7 p.m. to 7 a.m. tournament, and we pull up to like our second set. We get out of the trucks, and I can see in the running light glow out in this field, I see a shed 10 feet from my buddy's truck. I'm like, dude, shed. I go over, I pick it up. Everyone comes over. They're like, no way, this is crazy. My buddy Austin walks up and he picks up the match set to it, which was sitting 2 feet away. Now, for reference, the side that I found was just a little 3-point side. He picks up what is a spike with a trigger on it. I mean, like, that's all it was. So I didn't even see it standing right over the top, but he walked over and saw it right away. And then we went out to my main property where I spend most of my time whitetail hunting, and we're doing a coyote set. I grab both tripods and rifles. My buddy Austin goes and grabs the game call, and we start walking to a new set, and he's catching up to me, and I hear him go, whoa, hold on. And he reaches down, and because I had both tripods, I was looking forward. I couldn't really look down. We didn't have headlamps on. It was at like 11:30 at night, and he walks up and picks up one side to my biggest buck that I've been chasing for several years out there. I call him Trash Man. He picks it up. I immediately go into, like, we got to match this thing up mode. And so he goes back to the truck, or he's on his way back to the truck because he didn't even have a headlamp with him. And I see his phone light bouncing through the field coming back to me, and he picks up the match set to it. That turned into, hey, let's just look around the area. Within 30 feet we picked up three more sheds. So seven sheds in two nights of coyote hunting, all in the pitch black. And I'm so pumped. I've got a match to my number one target buck. And I'm telling you, he is way bigger than I expected. Seeing the pictures, I knew he was big. Having my hands on the antlers, he is so much bigger. And I still need to measure them out. So I'll probably give an update in a future episode. Anyways, shed hunting's in full swing. Turkey season is kicking off. We're about to be in season here in Missouri, even though it's bumped back a little bit this year. But things are heating up, and I hope you guys are getting out, picking up antlers, figuring out where your turkeys are if your season's not in, or having success actually chasing spring birds if it is. I'm kind of excited about turkey season, probably more so than I ever have been, but I'm still, you know, on the fence. I'm going to go do it. But I'm going to miss a lot of turkey season just for other trips like New Mexico shed hunting or a spring black bear trip that I've never gone on. I've never spring black bear hunted or just gone on a specific black bear hunt. And so I'm super pumped about all that. Anyways, enough of the shed hunting and the forecasting of this season. Let's jump in with Pedro for another awesome episode.
Like, he was doing things that were just badass.
That was one of the coolest moments of my life.
I was really scared, but knowing that Dan had the gun, I did have the rifle, like, we would be okay.
All right, guys, welcome to today's show. Now, joining me on the show is Pedro Delgado. He is down in Florida, but he's kind of been hunting all over the place. And I'm super excited to chat because Florida and Texas are becoming two of my favorite hunting states. Like, the laws that you guys have, the amount of animals that you can hunt is pretty awesome. So I'm excited to have you on, man.
Hey, what's going on? I want to say I appreciate you having me on here today, and thank you for the invite, buddy.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm pumped to just get into it and talk about hunting because, I mean, you know how it is with hunters. As soon as you find out somebody's a hunter, it's trail camera pictures for 45 minutes and you're being pulled away like, hey, we got to go. But there's something about just talking about hunting and hearing people's passion. So I'm pumped to hear that.
Yes, sir.
Why don't you start out by just sharing a little bit about yourself, kind of where you live and maybe how you got into hunting, what that looked like for you at a young age.
Well, my name's Pedro Delgado. I'm 32 years old. I was born and raised in Key West, Florida, and halfway through my sixth grade year, I moved to Tampa. I've hunted from the low south portion of Florida, from Clewiston all the way now out to New Mexico, and hoping to continue my journey. And I have a lease in South Carolina, and I hunt Florida every spring. And I got lots to talk about, but hopefully I can get it all in this small segment here. I'm excited just to talk about it with you guys here.
Yeah, man, we will hit a ton of different stories, and honestly, that's really what I like to hear. But it seems like a lot of people, you mentioned having a lease in South Carolina. I've talked to a lot of people in Florida. In fact, one of my buddies lives there in Lakeland, and they've got a lease up in Georgia. It seems like a lot of people who live in Florida that like to hunt go north a state or two and look for their leases. What's up with that?
I would say when I was younger, we did have a lease down in South Florida with me, my dad, and my grandfather, with a couple of their buddies from they grew up with. And the hunting back then was absolutely awesome. We hunted on this little piece of property that we leased from the Like Brothers property. It's what it's called down there. And we the section we hunted was called like Hackle Trap, Gator Slough. And there was a couple other ones that we were leasing. But the bow hunting out there was unreal, dude. It's like hunting in a jungle. Plenty of pigs, plenty of deer and stuff like that. And it just, over the years, man, it just, the amount of money it takes to get a lease down there now is, it's, you can't even fathom. Like, at first it was just, it was small, everybody, every year, I never heard my dad complain about the lease fees, and then it just one day is like, we can't do this anymore. It's like 10 grand now. There's like, there's no way. So that started becoming towards the end of it there. So about a year or two later after that, a buddy of ours that also lives down in Key West is like, hey man, I got a lease in South Carolina. Why don't you all start hunting with that? And after that, it was history from there. We've been hunting there since now, 22 plus years.
Dang.
And then we've had some of the properties we've had the same time, the whole entire time. And then some of them we lost and then we got back. But I think a lot of people in Florida that tend to go to Georgia and South Carolina, I would say one, management's a lot better. The quality of deer would be that, for one. Florida public land, I'm not trying to dog it, but it's hard, man.
Yeah.
And then, like, the rules and regulations just, to me, it might make sense to other people than me. It just don't make sense.
Yeah.
As far as hunting public land and stuff like that, it's getting harder and harder there to hunt it. Like, they have a preference point system now too. I was just actually having a conversation with a buddy at work that he's been applying for the same unit and he has like 7 preference points and he's a resident and he still can't get a turkey tag for there.
Oh my gosh.
So I did some digging, and because some of the websites you can go to, like for New Mexico example, it'll give you like the past data points and stuff like that, how many people applied, and then how many tags were given. Like, it took me like a lot of digging to find out information. Finally, I made a phone call. I mean, the dispersion of tags ain't too bad. It says like 95% of the tags will go to residents for public land and then like 5% to non-residents. But the lady then told me like, well, that's not going to be the case anymore. Now they're going to break it down like a 90-10 split. So a lot of them tags so a lot of the tags that used to be only like 10 tags. So that means 10 of the, all tags will go to the Florida resident. But now that you brought it to 10%, now you cut the tags, and now some more will go to non-residents now versus residents. So I think that's another big deal with Florida hunters. I think they might be getting a little fed up with, I would say. But I will say the turkey hunting is unreal if you can find somewhere to go. I've been trying to shoot my Osceola since like 2017 when I really got into turkey hunting again, and I still haven't done it. I got close. I missed. I muffed a shot with a buddy of mine. I was fortunate enough to go with him, a piece of property he had, and I blew it. And then now I'm still on the goal for that. Sorry, I get long-winded sometimes.
You're good, man. I think down in Florida, you guys kind of got hosed in the sense that, like, it seems like a lot of the East Coast and the West Coast, I mean, some of the states are kind of clearing out. Like California, the migration of people coming out of California toward the center of the country, toward the front range of the Rocky Mountains, or even all the way here in Missouri. Like, we're seeing so many people coming from the coast, but then you're like the one East Coast state where people are just flooding in like crazy. And that's probably why you're seeing the lease prices go up, why you're seeing it being harder and harder to draw tags, because you have so many more people in the subdivisions. We go down to Florida probably 4 to 6 times a year, and every time we go, there's like another couple hundred acre subdivision that's being put in. And hopefully it doesn't keep moving north, because like the northern part of Florida is pretty killer hunting. I've been fortunate to go out with some buddies on some forestry land and pig hunt, and I haven't deer hunted with them yet, but they keep trying to get me to come out, and I think this year I'm gonna come out and turkey hunt out there. So
dude, you're gonna love it. That's so badass, honestly.
The turkey, like, for me, turkey hunting, I love the camaraderie of it, right? The actual pursuit of turkey, I haven't fully got that passion for turkey hunting like I have for other things, but when I can get out with some buddies and hear gobbles, like, my heart starts racing just like it does you know, when I hear a coyote sound off when I'm hunting, yeah. or when you hear that crunch of a twig behind you. So it's definitely getting there for me, but I haven't really traveled. That's one of the species that I haven't traveled somewhere specifically to hunt. And so I'm pretty excited about it.
Oh, you're going to love it, dude. They're a lot more aggressive bird too than like your Easterns will get fired up, but your Osceolas, I mean, they're just, if they see each other and they're in the mood, they're just going to go at it and they literally fight to the death. You get them wild up enough. But nah, that's cool, man. Yeah, and then not only that, dude, it's probably one of, if not the most expensive turkey hunts you can get right now out of all the four subspecies. You know, and I think that's what's getting high demand too, just the turkeys alone.
Yeah. Well, my buddy that invited me down there, he said they're getting 30, 40 birds on camera constantly. He's like, wow. Dude, he's like, we'll get you on birds. His buddy is, I hunted with him also, but he kind of heads up their lease. And he's like, dude, come down. I will put you on birds. Like, that's his passion, is getting people on birds. And anyways, I'm super excited to go down. And when you can go and turkey hunt, but then you can also kill pigs, because we have some pigs in Missouri, but hardly any. That's just fun in and of itself. Like, to go out turkey hunting and then go smack a couple pigs, man. I've gotten into thermal hunting a lot lately, and holy cow, that's becoming a passion. When you have that many targets, like, it's not like deer hunting, you go fill your tag. It's just like, dude, shoot them all if you can.
Yeah, the pigs in Florida have become a very big problem. I mean, they're getting pretty bad where I hunt out in South Carolina too. We have a buddy there in the off season. We let them get the pig rights because we kind of just want them gone, because when deer season rolls around, man, they don't even let the deer come in and eat. You know, I've seen so many pigs and shot so many pigs that, honestly, if I were to never see another pig again, I'd be totally fine with it. But no, in the aspect of that, Florida is a great opportunity for pig hunting. And, dude, you can find them just about anywhere, dude. I mean, so that's going to be – you're going to like that for real, especially if you've never shot a pig or haven't shot many of them. It's a blast. You know, just mow them down, dude.
See, I've gone pig hunting plenty, but it's one of those things, because we don't have them here, I think is why I like it so much. It's like a treat when I get to go. And I can only imagine the frustration that would come with trying to run a property for deer hunting and managing it for decent bucks. And then you can't get them to come out during the daytime because all the pigs are hanging out in the food plot or at the bait site or wherever. And they really do. They just outcompete everything. Nothing breeds as quick as them. They're way more aggressive than all of the other things out there. And they don't really have natural predators except for when they're piglets. So,
yeah, that's absolutely true. They're just big bullies, honestly. I've seen them, deer be sitting there eating, hogs come, they'll pretty much run them out of there. Like, chase them around, get out of here. This is my corn, or this is my area. Just get. But South, I would say, now the funny thing is, Florida pigs versus South Carolina pigs, it's like you would think they're two different pigs. Because the ones here in Florida I find to be a little bit dumbed down, but the ones in South Carolina, dude, I don't know what it is, but they are absolutely smart pigs. I've seen them, yeah, I don't know why, but like, for example, when they come out in South Carolina, they know that where the food's at, but they'll come and they'll check down the lane. Like, and then they'll grab, especially if you got cob, don't even get cob corn. They'll grab a cob corn. I seen them do it. They'll grab a cob corn and pick it up and go back into the woods, eat it, and then come back out, pick up another one and go. With Florida pigs, they'll just sit there and mow down 50 pounds of corn until it's gone.
Dang.
So, yeah. It's funny. It's depending on where you go, hogs will act a little different. And then you get into that regular domestic looking pigs, but then you get like them razor looking back, like the Russian looking boars too, which those are way more aggressive. You run into those.
But dude, I would not want to tussle with a pig. I mean, we had pigs, and we helped raise them and helped slaughter them and everything. And dude, those things are brutal. Like, they're just strong, even as piglets. Like, I've seen a sow with her 3-week-old piglets, and she'll be eating, and they come up to eat, and she'll just flip them with her nose. They'll literally launch 10 feet in the air, land like nothing ever happened. And I'm like, dude, they're just strong right out of the gate. And they can run, like the speed at which they run and the power. I've seen them climb hog wire fences before. I had one that kept getting out and I couldn't figure out how. And one day it was right next to me and we would get popcorn and we would get leftover Panera and all this different stuff and feed them. And I poured some popcorn over the fence, and I look over, and this little piglet, a couple weeks old, climbs about 4 rungs up on the hog wire, because you know the lower spot is smaller rectangles, and it climbed up to where it could fit through, and then dove into the pen. And I'm like, man, even at that young age, they're smart enough to figure out how to get up and over a fence. And yeah, so that's definitely an animal that I wouldn't want to have to fight in the wild, especially if I didn't have a solid weapon, because they can take some shots too.
That reminds me of a story my dad told me. When I was still a baby, but I remember my dad tells me the same story over. Him and a couple of his buddies went out on a buggy hunt when they had their lease down in Gator Slough, and they were driving, shooting pigs off the buggy. So they shot a couple of them, and my dad gets off to go start dragging the pigs, and he's like smelling something. He's like, man, what's that smell? And he looks up, and it's a boar hog that was with the sows that they shot. He didn't see, and he's sitting there slapping his jaws, and my dad starts running, and he's yelling to the guy at the buggy, it's got teeth, it's got teeth. And he's running as fast as he can, and he can't outrun it. And luckily for his buddy, my dad was far enough forward, and the pig was still far back. And he shoots the pig, and like it lands by his feet, and like, you know how it slid all the way by his feet. But them things are quick, and they get you with them teeth. It's bad.
Yeah, and even the big fat ones, like you would think they're not athletic. And they, dude, they're forces of nature. We were hunting down in Texas, and I'm sure I've told it on the podcast, but this was a couple of years back. We were hunting down in Texas, and we look across the slough. I had just heard my buddy shoot. He shot 3 times at this big boar. And he's like, dude, it's swimming across the slough right now. And I look out, and this thing is, I mean, it's a couple hundred yards, and it was less than a minute, and that thing made it all the way across. And one of our buddies, he was standing there hunting, and all of a sudden we see him. We can see the orange. We can see the pig. We hear boom, 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 boom. He's just unloading with his AR, and then everything goes quiet. And I'm like, oh, sweet. Hopefully he got it, and it didn't get away. Well, he leaned his AR up against the tree and pulled out his 9mm. Or no, he didn't even pull out his 9mm. He was just walking towards the pig thinking it was dead. And that thing stood up and charged him. So now we're watching him running backwards through the woods, ends up emptying his clip, and this thing is not dead. So now he just turns around and is sprinting away from it. Meanwhile, 2 of our other buddies who were hunting that side of the slough come over to figure out all the commotion, and they have to circle and get shots on this thing where they're not like doing crossfire, you know? And so they end up shooting it. It took us probably 15 minutes to get all the way around that slough over to him. And the guy who had been running from the pig, he still had his Glock in his hand, and he's just shaking. The slide's open because he's empty, and he's like, it was trying to kill me. It was trying to kill me. And I'm like, dude, I can't imagine how sketchy that would be.
I can only imagine the PTSD he might have now. Oh, dude.
And this was that was the funny part. I thought this was their hunting buddy who had been coming out every year. and he was like a new hunter. Like this was his second time out.
No.
And so I'm like, dude, that guy's never shown his face at camp again.
Holy moly. That's crazy.
Yeah. I like pig hunting for sure. And we were joking about it last night. We went coyote hunting and I was like, part of me wishes they were around here. Like not a ton of them, but enough that you could get out and catch one crossing a field every now and then. The problem is you don't get one without getting an infestation.
I will tell you though, them what you find a nice little 100 or 150 pound sow, man, that's some good eating right there. That's better than getting in the grocery store.
Dude, you smoke that thing. Oh yeah, I've done a pig hunt in Georgia, I've done it in Florida. I've bounced around here and there and got out. Not on like a trip specifically for pigs for the most part, but if I'm somewhere where there's pigs, you better believe I'm going to try and get out at night and kill a couple.
Definitely, man.
So with this lease in South Carolina, I saw in your questionnaire, you had mentioned like kind of the progression of hunting and the deer that you're pursuing. And it sounds like you guys are getting into a handful of pretty nice bucks up there.
Dude, I'm not going to say like the Pacific area just because of what we talked about before. But I think generalize like South Carolina as a whole, it's just because they're starting to figure out now, hey, if we give out a little bit less tags or for the statewide, we give out a little less tags and we change the rules a little bit, we can probably keep a lot of the younger adolescent deer from dying, you know?
Yeah.
And over the time, it's gotten better with just that. That was a good step, but our club alone is that we used to have an 8-point rule. If it was 8 points, you can shoot it. It's a legal buck on our club.
Yeah.
And we're allowed 3 bucks on our club and 3 does per year. The state allows you to have 4 bucks, but we only shoot 3. And
dude, that's a lot of bucks.
Dude, me personally, I have not even killed 2. I might have killed 2 in one season, like, maybe twice.
Okay.
But there's other guys there that they'll fill every single buck tag. That we know that are separate from the lease.
Yeah.
But progression wise, we went from 8 pool to 15-inch spread in just like two or three years alone. We have seen like the age class get up there, and now you're starting to see 2.5-year-old deers with 15-inch spread. What the problem lies there with now is like technically it's legal deer, but our club has gotten so mature as a whole that we're starting to just let those deer walk and stuff like that. And a couple years ago, a buddy of ours, he actually shot, that's probably one of the biggest deer that I've got to see. Just, I wasn't there for the time, but I saw the pictures of it. 157-inch deer out of South Carolina.
Dang.
He weighed over, I think he said he weighed, 230 plus pounds or something like that.
Dang, that's a big, like, East Coast, Southeast deer.
Oh, and the best part about it is it was in velvet. So, like, perfect velvet. It was beautiful, dude. And then this past season, a buddy of mine, he's watched this deer for about 2 or 3 years now on his stuff. This is his own personal stuff. It scored 146. And the year before that, he shot another one that was in like 140 or something, 140s, 147.
Yeah.
And like the biggest deer I've ever shot was probably at 124. And I mean, for 124 in South Carolina, that's still a big, good deer. I mean,
oh yeah,
124 anywhere would be a good deer for anyone, you know? But yep. When you think of big deer, you don't think of South Carolina. You know, you think Texas, you think Ohio, you think Kansas, you know? But that just goes to show with like a right program in place and everybody being on the same page and just letting the deer walk, you know? You'd be amazed in like what 2 or 3 years can do. And everybody's starting to figure that out. And I mean, it's good, man. It's awesome. Cause I'll go a whole season without shooting a buck, you know, just to let them I'll knock down does if I need meat, you know. I just,
yeah.
It's mind-blowing, you know. It's getting more and more common where 120, 130, even 140, an occasional 150, you know. It's not as uncommon anymore, just after management and stuff like that.
Yeah, I think that with whitetail, there's only a couple states that I would say you, even with management, you're not going to be shooting 130, 140, 150.
Yeah.
You know, like New Mexico, Arizona, like some of those desert whitetail, like coos deer, subspecies of whitetail, like the odds of them getting up to that are pretty slim, but just about everywhere else, like if you put in the right management practices, you can be seeing 130, 40, 50 inch deer. And the stigma behind shooting deer, even of that caliber, it only comes from social media. It only comes from hunting media where, you know, you're seeing these guys who are on heavily managed land passing up 160 inch deer all the time. That's not realistic. Like that is not going to be what 99% of the population will ever be able to do. And especially in these states where, you know, four bucks, you can shoot $4. Like Iowa, you get $1.
Yeah.
And I think Iowa, you get $1. There's,
I think most, it's one. Yeah.
If you look at how many bucks you can kill each year and what states have the most Boone and Crockett and Pope and Young entries, there is a direct correlation. I don't know of a single state that's in the top 10 that you can kill $3. No. It's almost always two, and in a lot of cases, it's one. And like even up in Wisconsin, we just have the exact right recipe for success for growing big bucks up there. And you get a buck with your rifle and a buck with your bow. Period. Like, it's not, oh, hey, here's another bonus tag. Here's this, here's that. And even in Missouri, there's a lot of really good deer in Missouri. And I would have never guessed that Missouri was that great of a whitetail state. It's $2 no matter what, no matter what method. And then I would imagine it's the same thing with season length. Because the more pressure that are on the whitetails, it's not even about how many of them get killed. It's about stress. Like, stress is a limiting factor for whitetail.
I totally 100% agree with you. Our season, you're gonna blow your mind when I tell you this, is August 15th all the way to January 1st. And on both of those ends, you have a youth season that's the weekend before and after the season. And here's the big old kicker. It's gun right out of the gate.
For that whole time? So
from August... the whole entire time.
What? That's how long your rifle season is?
That's how many deer that we have that allows to have that. In our section of South Carolina. Now, granted, there's a couple. It's broken up into four units. I think some of the northern, they have a bow season stuff. But where we hunt at, it's August 15th to January 1st. It's gun right out of the gate. You can shoot them in velvet. And you can shoot them in the rut with gun. It's crazy. And then, but with that, you get some of the smartest deer in the nation, I think.
Because I
honestly say, we probably have some of the smart, hands down, some of the smartest deer out there. I will put up money against any other deer in the nation that our deer are probably some of the smartest.
Yeah. But, well, I mean, you would have to be to make it even out of 1 year. That'd be tough, but you guys must just have insane deer numbers to be able allow that kind of hunting and still have a maintainable or sustainable population. I can't even imagine, because we see, like, I can see it very clearly here in Missouri. As soon as youth rifle hits, the deer patterns change just like that. Then as soon as regular rifle season hits, same thing. When I grew up in Wisconsin hunting, 9-day rifle season, deer habits change significantly. That first gunshot they hear, boom, everything changes. Same thing here in Missouri. And I even saw a big shift this year. Like, buck activity during daylight is normally pretty consistent. Like, I can see a lot of bucks moving from like late October all the way through the end of November. And this year they opened up several rifle seasons because they found CWD in certain counties. And so it's like they had CWD hunts, they had antlerless hunts, they had extra seasons. And so it's like, I think there were five different seasons that people could be out in the woods with rifles hunting deer. And I just think it's going to, the deer are going to get smarter or they're going to die. Like those are the only two options.
Yeah. I mean, and the only way you just like slow that down is this, you have to implement those kind of rules within your own club, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, because if that, I mean, and then that's not to say now the deer you've been watching for the last 2 years doesn't walk over to the neighbor's property and they knock it down. That's just, that's anywhere you go, though, you know?
Yeah.
But in South Carolina, man, it's just crazy, dude. And then, but it's only from August 15th to September 15th, it's only buck. And then from September 15th on to the rest of the season, you can shoot doe.
Oh, now, interesting.
Yeah. They went to the doe tags now. So September, and it used to have a couple years ago, they would give you tags, but they also would have doe days, like where you didn't need to tag a doe.
Interesting.
But they stopped that years ago now, but I'm not quite sure what, how many does you're allowed. I need to check. I don't usually, I'll shoot one or two does, you know, because when I go out west, I'll get more meat and stuff like that. So I don't like to overdo it. And I usually might shoot one buck if I'm lucky. I'd got to time it just right. Like, I know, like, that beginning of the season when it first opens up, if I want to shoot a buck, that is my first, that first week to maybe into the second week is the best opportunity I'm going to get to shoot a buck. Now, like last year, here's a good story here. Last year, I have this buddy in Texas I've met through hunting and hunting axes and stuff like that. And he was super, super cool dude. He actually, I traded him some stuff. He did some stuff for me. And I said, hey, man, I don't know if you ever shot a whitetail on velvet, but I got my lease in South Carolina. I have velvet whitetail. He's like, no, dude, I always wanted one. I'm like, they're not very big. I mean, if you shoot a giant one, it's, I mean, a giant for us is 120 with occasional 130, 140, you know. But
yeah.
So he's like, dude, I'm down. So I set it all up for him. I had the trail cams out. And I finally found this like 9 point in one spot. Super nice deer, I would put him at 4.5, 5.5. Just a mature deer, you know, respectable buck.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, he's probably maybe 118, 120 mark, you know. But either way, I mean, regardless of score, he's a mature deer. He's 4.5, 5.5 year old deer. So I'm like, it's a deer I would shoot personally. So I'm like, I had it picked up and watching him. And I'm trying to get, and then finally the day comes and we're trying to, I sat with him a couple of times and then I would sit by myself. And then I think the two mornings before the last day we had there, I said, hey, the deer showed up yesterday night. He might show up in the morning time. And later on, like midnight, I get a picture of the deer. He lost all of his velvet.
Oh, no.
Oh, man. I'm like, no. All the velvet, like stripped clean off. I'm like, listen, I know you wanted one in velvet, but this is a really, really nice buck. He is mature. Like, you need to shoot this deer. If you can always come back next year, if you're more than welcome to come back next year if you want to. He's like, dude, I'd shoot that deer in a heartbeat. I said, yeah. Well, let's go do it.
Oh, so, man, that's crazy. Like, yeah. It always works out that way. Like, as soon as your buddies show up, I don't know what it is. And, I mean, obviously, I don't think the deer know when I go on a road trip. But, like, I'll see deer on camera, like, here and there. And as soon as I go out of state to hunt, it's, like, a guarantee they're going to be underneath my stand. And it drives me nuts, man, every single time. All right, guys, if you're anything like me, you have been doing some redneck engineering in order to hang your shed antlers or your cutoffs. up on the wall, or maybe they didn't even make it to the wall. They're laying all over the floor, leaned up in a corner somewhere, and not being displayed the way that they should be. I've finally found an awesome solution with RackHub. In fact, I just got the RH2 XL and put my largest match set on it, hung it up in my man cave, and I'm telling you right now, it looks amazing. In the past, my wife's been like, we're not hanging deadheads, we are not hanging antlers, it just doesn't look good, it doesn't fit the vibe. And now that she's seen the mount from RackHub, she's okay with me putting them in the house. Unfortunately for her, it's a little bit too late, because I officially have a man cave and a podcast studio for myself, and all of my sheds are going to be up on the wall soon. Once I tested it out and realized that it was rock solid, I went back online and ordered a 4-pack of the RH2 XLs so that I can get all of my match sets up on the wall, and I can't wait to finally display them proudly for everyone to see. If you've dealt with that same thing in the past, or maybe you're currently dealing with it, go to rackhub.com, figure out what mounting system works best for you, and make sure to use code NOMADIC for 10% off your order. All right, guys, I've got to tell you about some of the new XOP products that I've been using this fall, and some of them I use in kind of an unconventional way. First off, I use the Mondo saddle, but I also use their Turkey Hunter vest, and I take the Cold World stand, put it in the back of the vest, and carry it in that way. Depending on how far I have to pack in, I'll just bring a foot platform, but one thing I've learned is that if I put the seat cushion on the underside of the seat and flip it up, it turns it into a knee pad also, or I can flip the seat down and sit on it like a conventional tree stand. I also used their holster kit clipped right onto my saddle to carry in my climbing sticks while keeping my hands free. If you're interested in getting a mobile hunting setup like mine, go to xopoutdoors.com and use code NOMADIC for 10% off at checkout. Yeah, the whole idea of like getting somebody on a buck and then the velvet, I mean, we don't really have to worry about that here. Like, there's bucks that get shot with a little bit of velvet on. Typically, they're completely stripped clean by the time our seasons hit. But like, then, yeah, you add that because you can't control when they're going to just be fed up with it. It starts falling, and then they just start raking it off on a tree branch or on a tree trunk.
And it's funny, last year, I noticed with the season, they shedded their velvet a lot sooner than they usually do, too. Hmm. I don't know what happened there. Maybe just a lot more moisture. And it, I don't know, maybe it rotted off. I don't know if that's plausible or not. But they shedded their velvet a lot quicker last year than they did the year before last. So, man, it's like before the season even opened up, like the velvet was gone. Some of the deers.
Hmm.
And another thing is too, is funny. I noticed with a lot of the older mature bucks, they drop their antlers fairly earlier. And I'm like, are they sick? No, they're not sick. They're 200 pound deer. And even after the rut, they're still 170 pounds, 100. They just drop their antlers early. I don't know if that's just because they're an older deer and their habits are different and their body chemistry is different. But, and then now I'm looking at pictures now, and there's still younger bucks with antlers on. So it doesn't,
I wonder, I'm sure somebody's done a study on this, but I've always been curious about that. Like on years where you see deer holding antlers a lot longer or vice versa, dropping way sooner, I'm curious how long of a domino effect that has. Like, is it all going to be bumped back for a couple of years? Is it all going to happen earlier for a couple of years? Or will it like self-regulate after one season? You know, I don't know. When I see my big bucks drop early, I always get excited that now they're going to have more time to grow before they get hard-horned. Yeah. But I don't know. I haven't actually looked into any of that, so I'm not totally sure.
Yeah, that'd be a good something for me to research on. I get kind of worried because it's not a typical thing for us for them to drop antlers in December. So you're like, are they sick? Because I know deer, if they get sick, they'll drop their antlers a little early because it just their body's like, it's like a, how can I say this? Oh, man, it's...
it's almost like a self-preservation thing.
It's like the, I don't know, the help, not necessarily helps them heal, but it's like, this is making me feel more uncomfortable, so let me shake them off. You know, I know I've heard stories of stuff like that, but you know what I think it might be? I think it has a lot to do when the time of the year they are born. Because in some places here especially, I have seen fawns in August, September, and even towards the tail end of October with spots.
Holy cow.
Yeah. It's, so only thing that's makes sense is that you get your – because our rut is like mid-October is when our rut starts. So I'm thinking you get a lot of the mature does that get more into their breeding cycle. They'll get bred. And then you'll have like the yearlings the year before. Now they're at the age where they can breed and they go into heat around that like late November, early December mark. So that's the only thing I can think of that might change that whole cycle there. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, for example, axis deer or like that, they grow and shed their antlers around when they're born on their birthday date. It's not like a typical season. So you'll have a bunch of like, you'll have a bunch of axis deer that are in velvet and there'll be one is hard horn. And he's like solid white, like he's ready to drop his antlers. But that's the only other deer that I know that has like a weird shed cycle, I should say.
And I've heard with axis that there'll be like, they'll be on two different time frames. Like some bucks have no antlers at all. And other bucks are fully hard horned already. And it's like kind of split. And I don't know if it's a 50-50 split or not, but I heard that. And then I also heard that they have two different breeding cycles. And so it's like you have some deer that are born 6 months later than other deer, as far as axis go. I don't know. Yeah. I think with whitetail, for the most part, there's a general rule of like the rut. Like, I don't think any of them are rutting in spring for whitetail, but I think with axis it's like that, where it's like polar opposite times of year.
Yeah, it's crazy. And I know in South Florida there's a big like a section of South Florida where the deer are rutting in July. It's 90 degrees whitetails.
Dude, I would hate that. Can you imagine hunting South Florida in like July. That early? No, yeah. I'm not built that way, man. I don't like the heat. I don't like the humidity. I would rather it be 20 below zero and go hunting than 100 degrees.
Yeah, it's nuts. And then, like, even, like, I love hunting in August because I love deer in velvet. Man, it is hot. If you're not hunting in shorts and have a thermocell, you're not going to make it. It is just so dang hot, and the yellow flies are bad. The mosquitoes are bad. It's wet everywhere, and you're just – those are, like, two essential things you need to have between August and September. But, I mean, the hunting's fun definitely around that time of the year, you know, and then especially, like, when the rut rolls around. That's always a good time.
Like, up in Wisconsin, people put heaters in their blinds. Down there, you got to have AC units in your blind.
We have, it's funny that you say that. We have like a little hang fan that we use, and it's like super quiet. We found it on Amazon, and like, man, that thing's going to scare all the deer away. It's actually like super quiet, and I started taking that to the stand with me. I have a place to hang it.
Dude, that'd be me 100%. Or I've seen those ones that you hook on your like belt loop, and it blows air up your shirt.
Oh yeah.
I'm like, dude, I'd be sitting out there in that. I'd be blowing my scent everywhere though. I'm sweating like crazy, and every deer for three counties can smell me because I'm using a fan to cool myself off.
It's funny that you mentioned scent now. Now, do you typically like using scent away and stuff like that, or?
Dude, I do literally nothing. If I do anything for scent control, I smoke my clothes. Like, I'll have a bonfire, and I'll just stand in the smoke and let it get all over my hunting clothes, and I use that as a cover scent. But that is quite literally the only thing I do.
See, like, there's people out there who are, like, religious about scent control and using scent away and stuff like that. And I used to be one of the people. I'd spray down, put put raccoon pee on the bottom of my boots and all that good jazz. And me and my buddy had a talk one time. He's like, dude, that whole thing, you don't need none of that. I'm like, what do you mean? I mean, it helps you keep your scent. As long as you're hunting the right wind, it doesn't matter. If you even spray yourself down with all that stuff, the deer is still going to smell you because of the aspiration from your mouth, your armpit sweating. I mean, it says, he's like, you know what? I wash my clothes in regular detergent, and I'll go sit in a deer blind for how many hours. Damn. And as long as it's the right wind, it don't bother the deer none. And then I started thinking about it. I'm like, well, the guys that go out west and they go backpacking for 5-6 days, them guys ain't showering.
They're not bringing dead down wind with them, I'll tell you that.
They're hunting the right wind, and they're killing these giant bulls and these giant mule deer and stuff like that. So that right there, and people do it year after year, season after season. So I think some people get caught up in that scent away stuff, and man, it's actually cool because it takes
everything has to be exactly right just for that stuff to be effective.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, you really can't do any perspiring. The amount of smell that comes out of your mouth, like, I've seen scent away gum, or I don't know what brand it is, but it's essentially scent killer gum that people will chew while they're in the deer stand. It, from all the research, from all the videos, from all the ads and testimonials that I've heard, the most effective thing is an ozone machine like Ozonics.
And, I've heard of that.
And now the reason that if I were to do anything, I would buy those and use them. My buddy, he rents out cars on Turo here in town. And he's like, hey, I charge a $300 fee if they smoke cigarettes in my car. And he goes, I love when people smoke cigarettes in my car because I get an extra $300. But he has an ozone machine that he puts in the car, and he's like, I'll let it run overnight, and you cannot tell they ever smoked in the car.
Wow, that's amazing.
And I was like, I mean, if that's not a good enough testimony, I don't know what is. Because, like smoke is probably one of the strongest staining odors out there as far as, like, it's hard to get out of everything. And yeah, he's like, no. He's like, I'll do it, and you can't smell that they ever smoked in there.
It's like you always meet one in a group. Like, there's always some old man that smokes Marlboro Reds, you know, cowboy killers, and he kills a big buck year after year. Oh, yep. You can't smoke that. The stand, they're going to smell you. Watch this.
Dude, and, you know, I think smoke is the best cover scent out there. I really, truly believe that because it's such a strong smell, and every animal is used to it, whether it's a bonfire or a forest fire or a controlled burn. Every animal out there has smelled smoke before, and I personally think they get curious about it, and they need to know, is this danger or not? Do I need to be worried about this? And it's not like the first smell of smoke, they're gone. Otherwise, there wouldn't be any deer or elk left in Colorado with all the forest fires. Sure. You know, they'd all just be running from the smell forever.
For sure.
What you mentioned going out to Texas and hunting axis. When did you start, like, going out of state, aside from just up to South Carolina, and start out-of-state hunts?
I would say my out-of-state journey began probably a couple of years ago when I was like, okay, I'm in a part of my life now where I'm financially stable, you know, and I'm not rich, but I can start doing a little bit of things now. So I started my first thing. I'm like, let me start off small, you know. I decided I'm like, man, axis deer, they're so badass, but I got to shoot one free range, and I'm not doing high fence. I don't like high fence personally, and I want to be in the hill country, so it's a little bit challenging. So actually, I went on this, I don't know if you heard of it or not, what's it called? I just forgot the name of it. Darn it. Texas, it's called the Texas Form. You go on, it's a website, you go there, you click it, and they have like a discussion of like outfitters, and you go on there, and there's like random, not like big time outfitters, but guys there like axis hunt on certain amount of ranch for this much. And then there was one guy I seen on there, he's like axis hunt for a certain amount of price in Texas Hill Country outside of Brackettville. I'm like, That's the one. So I called them, and I was like, yeah, man, the best time to get out here is in June. June in Texas?
Ooh.
Oh, in the hill country? All right, sign me up. So that's what I did. So I booked it, and I went out there. I mean, it was like a decently priced hunt. The accommodations weren't the best, but, I mean, who cares? You're there for the hunt. You're not there to sit there and relax anyway. Yep. Man, I was like, what did I get myself into? You know, it's like 100 degrees outside in Texas, and it feels like it's getting you from the top, and then the heat on the rocks is bouncing off, so you're getting it from the bottom too.
Oh.
And so I'm like, oh, it's not too bad. I wear my short sleeves and stuff like that. And then not only that, the cactus there full force at that time of the year. And not only that, the ticks are bad. And so I got there kind of early, and the guy let me go sit in one area. I didn't see nothing that night. And next morning we went, and then, like, I've never seen any hills now. When I first started, like, hills, like anything with like altitude, I was like, dude, yeah, look at that mountain. It's just a giant hill to them, you know? So that's like, that started like the addiction almost, you know?
Yeah.
And then we hike up this little hill there. He's like, this is my favorite hill. I can see this way, I can see that way. And dude, you're sitting there, it's in the bit, and you just hear those, oh, like roar. And I'm like, what is that? He goes, that's an axis buck. And you just hear this thing going off in the distance. And, dude, it's probably one of the coolest things you ever hear. And you're like, man, what is that, Bigfoot? But it's an action deer. And you'll see him, you can hear him raking the tree, like an elk, just raking the trees. And we saw a couple nice axis bucks that morning out there grazing and stuff like that. They were like, not any big mature ones. So we're like, we'll come back this afternoon and we'll try to find one. And we went back that afternoon and we're sitting there, and there's a bunch of axes out there this time. There's like, I don't know, from like what we can see, we probably picking up 30, 60 axes, you know?
Jeez.
And then this one group came out and there is a big old buck in it, which is that guy there, if you can see him. So, and I'm watching this thing and I'm like, dude, this is like a miniature elk out here. They only got 6 points, but dude, they see them. That's what like started the addiction, just like the axe, something simple like that. And I'm like, dude, you're watching the thing. He's pushing this doe around, and I'm watching him at 300 yards. And I'm like, dude, I'm starting to get like the little jitters and stuff like that. And I'm like, what do you think he's at? He's like, what do you think? He's 32, 33. He's like, dude, that thing's over 32 all day long. And I'm like, I want that one. He's like, I hope you do, because that's a really good axis. So he's like, he's working this way, so we'll let him work this way. And he's coming. I get set up, and I go to shoot. And I made the major mistake of not putting earplugs in. And the shot was only, I'd say only, but it was 200 yards. I didn't have earplugs in, and I'm like kind of downwards on a hill, you know. And so when I shoot, I actually miss the deer. And then my ears are ringing for the rest of the day. And the guy that was standing next to me didn't have his earplugs in either. And here his ears are ringing. I'm like, dang it, I just totally like screwed that up. And he's like, no, it's all right. He didn't spook too bad. I think if we come back here tomorrow afternoon, he'll be here. Sure enough, we get there tomorrow at the next day, like midday. It's him and like four other bucks he's with, four other axis bucks. And now you're looking at these things and there's just like, it looks so big on the hoof, man. And
oh, yeah.
This time I made the shot count and I got him. And I was like super stoked. And I'm like, so I'm like, when can I come back and do this again? He's like, dude, we got all dad too. Do you want to come back in February? You can get an all dad.
Gosh.
I was like, yeah, I want to come back in February. So that's what I did. I came back in February. I shot they had like, dude, we've been watching this all dad and we got pinpoint. I think he knows what to do. Cause And an odd dad can be little tricky creatures, man. I'll tell you that. They're little tricky creatures. And they had him pinpointed down. It was one big old mature ram. And he had like, I don't know how many ewes with him. And it was like the first day, the first morning out of there, like the first 2 hours. And here comes the all dad. And I'm looking at this thing and I'm like, looking at him. And they're just covered. The amount of ground that they can cover in a short amount of time is unbelievable. He's like, all right, he's in a good spot. We can make a stalk. I was like, all right, let's go. So we went down this one hill, crossed like a little valley, went back up on this other hill. And we're pretty much walking the same trail that they just walked. And I'm like, how in the hell? Like, this is taking us like a half hour. They just walked us in 5 minutes. Like, how is this possible?
Yep.
So we're trying to make, like, walking and making this stalk. And finally, I get within 250 yards of him. And I prone out. And he's like, all right, you see him, right? I said, yeah. He's like, make a good shot. They're tough animals. And the thing with all dad is, in any African game, their vitals are a little bit more forward. So what you would aim on, like a whitetail or anything like that, it's actually a little bit more far forward. So you have to aim pretty much like right at the point of the shoulder. So I put it right there in that point of the shoulder and I dropped him like a sack of potatoes. But then the real issue started playing in. He's like, he's down, but if you don't get him to stop kicking, he's going to fall off that cliff. I'm like, oh no. So I'm like, I'm shooting him. I shot him again to get him to stop kicking. I made another good shot. And he's doing this. He's just rolling. Every time he's kicked, he's rolling. So finally, he stops kicking, and I go over there, and I'm like, dude, this is awesome. Like, they're probably one of my favorite animals, honestly. They're so smart, and their eyesight is so, like, great. They can pick you off from 400 yards away, dude. And
dang.
And they got these like little funny little ears and their chaps. The chaps is probably the most coolest thing about them, along with their horns and stuff like that. But the body on this thing was like, what? It's like, it was way over 300 pounds.
Holy cow.
I'm like, how are we going to drag this thing? So it took like three of us. Luckily, there was a spot where the Jeep could get up in to try to load it up.
Yeah.
And we're trying to drag this thing to load it. And I heard the guy, oh no, I did something to my back because it was so heavy and we're trying to drag it. And finally we get it there. And then I'm like, man, I'm got a couple more days here. He's like, how much would you, I mean, how, you think I could shoot another axe? He's like, yeah, if you want to. I'm like, sign me up then.
Yep.
So that same trip there. It was a little funny because when I went out that next afternoon, he drops me off. He goes, okay, you know what to do. It's like, wait, you're not coming with me? He's like, you know what you're doing. So I
– Hey, so I can, listen, even though it's a guided hunt, I can respect that. Because for me, like, once I've done it, I don't want my hand held again. You know what I mean? Like, don't get me wrong, when it comes time to drag that thing out, you better be here to help. But
for sure, man.
Other than that, like, I think there's something cool about that where you're actually out there on your own trying it.
Yeah. And then this year was probably one of my most favorite hunts so far. I finally drew a tag for mule deer in New Mexico. And, man, there's so much I can talk about, but I know we are limited on time. But, yeah, I drew a tag for New Mexico this year, and I was fortunate enough I could harvest my first mule deer.
Dude, which heck that, yeah.
In the Gila there. You know, you're familiar with the Gila in New Mexico?
Yep.
So it was one of the Gila units I was able to harvest a mule deer. And, man, I just – like, I'm unfortunate in the aspect of, like, when I go on these hunts, I don't really have anybody that goes with me, you know?
Yeah.
But this is something I've wanted to do, like all these little trips since I was a kid. So, I mean, I just go by myself, you know? And then, like, and the cool part about it is that when you go about it yourself, you meet people along the way who share the same passion and goals as you do. And like, it's unbelievable, like how many people I've met along the way, like especially New Mexico with the outfitter there, Michael DeLeo and Alicia Johnson, like they're just great people, you know?
Yeah.
And then they're your buddies for life, you know? And then you get, it's hard, man. You know, eventually I might have a buddy that comes with me, but I guess what I'm trying to say is that if you have like some kind of goal in your head and you're maybe a little worried or timid or scared, you're like, oh man, I wish my buddy, I don't want, dude, go do it. I mean, you don't want it. The worst thing you can do, I think, to yourself is 5, 10, 15, even 20 years down the line, you look back and you're like, man, I wish I would have done that.
Yeah.
You know?
And yeah, I feel like not passing up opportunities in the moment out of fear or timidity or whatever it is, like, you're going to regret it. I've never gone on an awesome adventure and regretted doing it. Like, sure, things can go wrong. I joke about it. I'm like, the adventure doesn't actually start until something goes wrong. You know, whether it's a flat tire or broken down vehicle or baggage gets lost in the airline. I don't know. There's something about it. And I think that's a great note to leave the listeners with, is like, get out there and try this stuff. That's what the whole idea behind the Nomadic Outdoorsman was. I wanted to talk to people from all different walks of life. I mean, I'm talking to you, a guy from Florida who's hunted Florida and South Carolina most of his life, and now you're getting out and trying new hunts, and Awdad's one of your favorite things to hunt now because you actually took a risk and went and did it.
You know, and you're alone, but you're not alone. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You're hunting with somebody. You know, eventually I do want to get to the point where I know enough knowledge and I'm skilled enough where I can maybe do a DUI stuff, but I'm not going to say I know everything, but I've learned enough what to do and not to be scared. You know, I know long range shooting in Florida, that's not really a thing, but there is ranges in Florida, some, not a lot, where you can learn how to long range shoot. There's articles online. There's good informational people out there and influencers that give you the information and the tools that you need, you know?
Yeah.
And like, if anybody here after the show, if you got any questions about shooting, hunting, what can I do? Dude, I'm more than open to help somebody else want to reach their dreams and their goals or whatever it is, you know. I just like to see other, like, myself succeed and other people succeed and be able to, like, do what they want to do, you know. I just...
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I love hunting and it's a passion, dude. And I sometimes I don't have the words just to describe it, and some of these people, PETA, they don't know, man. You know, and in hunting, I would say there's a lot of happy times, but there is some sad times too, you know, and not sad as an aspect, because as us hunters, there is a little bit of sadness that comes with the hunting. You know, it's not easy to take a life, and I mean, every kill, you know, I get a little bit of sadness, but I thank the animal, and I say thank you for sacrificing your life to feed me and my family, and you've made so many great memories and stuff like that, you know, and
yeah,
and I hope it was enough, you know, in God's eyes and stuff like that, and I don't know, sorry. But
no, dude, you're good, man. I think anybody who's gone and done that, anybody who's taken the life of an animal can relate to it. Like, people think we're just stone cold killers out there slaughtering everything we can, and sure, it's there's a lot of fun to it. But yeah, there's a reverence to it also. You mentioned people reaching out if they had any questions. Where can they find you? Where can they reach out and chat with you?
It's going to be Pedro_Delgado3Eyes for Roman numeral 3 on Instagram and also on Facebook too. Just type in Pedro Peter Delgado Roman numeral 3. Pedro in English means Peter, so that's how the little nickname stuck. But
yeah,
anyways. Yeah, dude, I wish.
That's awesome, man. I really appreciate you hopping on, and I always hate when I have to cut conversations short. Of course, today somehow my scheduling software booked 3 different calls back to back. So this was, it just happened that way. And then on top of that, we've got a gender reveal party that we're setting up for our close friends. And so my kids are getting off the bus. I got to load a trailer, get a bunch of supplies over to this gender reveal party. Otherwise, we'd probably carry on this conversation for another hour and a half.
Yes, sir.
But dude, we'll have to do it again, man. Season's about to kick off. Turkey season's about to kick off. And, dude, with you being down in the Tampa area, we go through there all the time. So we're just going to have to get out and get on a hunt together.
Let me know if you want to go fishing.
Oh, dude, I'm all about that. I'll get out there and, yeah, Florida fishing's way different than Missouri fishing. So I appreciate you hopping on, man. Thanks a ton, and good luck this season.
Thank you, Dan. I appreciate you. Thank you, buddy.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.